smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
3, 2, 1.
Go Smarter 100!
Dr. Ginger Follison on USGA rules.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Wow, we made it. Episode number 100 of the Golf Smarter podcast. Thank you so very much. You are the sixth man on the court, the home field advantage, the gallery walking up the 18th of a major. It's with your kind and continued support, feedback, and suggestions that Golf Smarter has evolved to be the best part of my week, and hopefully the best part of yours, too. But trust me, we're not done. So when we communicate via email, write back to one another, and I say, stay tuned, I'm not just talking about your golf swing. I'm talking about the future of Golf Smarter, and hopefully there is a long and productive and educational one as well. Special thanks to Matt Fannin, a regular listener to the Golf Smarter podcast from Santa Rosa, California. Recently, Matt's company, Fannin & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc. You can reach Matt at area code 707-524-7526. He wasn't expecting that, but hey, invite me to your golf tournament, and that's what you get. Anyway, Matt invited me to play at his annual corporate golf outing with his customers and colleagues, and during the lunch and award segment of the afternoon, he allowed me to record the opening of today's show. So thanks to everyone for participating and being part of Golf Smarter. Today, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf will talk about new putting wedge from Odyssey and the best way to store your clubs. Our guest today is Dr. Ginger Follison, who's been with the USGA since 1996 and is now the Assistant Director of Rules Education. Welcome, Ginger.
Hello, Fred.
How are you?
I'm doing just swell. Thanks for asking.
We like swell. Swell is groovy.
Uh-huh.
So I got to ask you, when you were growing up as a kid, you'd be playing games with other kids. Mm-hmm. Were you like a rules nut? I mean, is this your thing?
Well, you know, one of the things is I didn't start playing golf until after I was out of college, so I was kind of a late bloomer in terms of golf. But when I was in college and going through high school, and in college more so, my part-time jobs were in officiating. I officiated basketball and softball and volleyball, field hockey. Yeah, so I was kind of a rules nut all the way through.
Okay. Yeah, I've always had a lot of respect and admiration for the people who, even after they play sports, they go into the officiating part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the love of the sport, but hey, come on, there's rules, let's stick to it.
Yep.
And that was that was how you were.
Yeah.
But when you were a little kid, were you
when
like...
I was a little kid. No, when I was a little kid, we didn't have that many organized sports when I was a little kid.
No, but when you were just playing games with other kids.
In that case, that you just kind of had to resolve the... you know, the conflict as you went along. So we were pretty good at negotiating with each other and figuring out, you know, when the tie went to the runner and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I kind of made up the rules as we went along.
Yeah,
as long as it suited me.
And you just make it work, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting. So you do play golf.
Yes.
And you got hooked.
Yes.
So the USGA opportunity was like, this is going to be fun.
Yeah, this is going to be a good gig, and it has been. You know, it's been a good run here the last few years.
And where is the USGA based? Where's your offices?
USGA headquarters are based in Far Hills, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And in this location, we have a museum which is now under construction, and a new Arnold Palmer wing is being added, and it will be the history wing will be. Open next summer of 2008.
Wow. Well, then we should get together again before that opens and let everybody know.
It's going to be a pretty special place. You know,
awesome.
A lot of high-tech stuff and everything. And so we're kind of in the middle of nowhere, so it takes a little bit of effort to get here. But when the museum opens, it's going to be worth the effort to get to the USGA headquarters.
Very much so. Really interesting. So let's get on to the rules part of this because there's so many questions all the time about rules. And When you go out and I guess you go out and speak to people about rules, doing rules education, what's the message you're trying to get across just from the start?
Well, the message is pretty much that, you know, there's a code out there to play by. And, you know, whether it be your Saturday morning round or the U.S. Open, it's the same set of rules, you know, and whether you're playing in the United States or Australia or Scotland, it's the same set of rules all over the world for all levels of golf. And the rules of golf, you know, the rules can help you, like we mentioned before, when you're a kid growing up, they'll help you resolve conflict. You know, so whether it's a $3 Nassau on Saturday morning or the U.S. Open, I mean, same code, set of rules will help you resolve those conflicts. And so it's pretty neat. And what's fascinating about them is that there's these 34 little rules that apply to all of golf in all different conditions. You know, some courses, I mean, there's acres of land out there, and every course is different. Some has water, some doesn't, some don't. You know, some have cart paths, paved cart paths, others don't. Some have sand bunkers, others don't. You know, so, but this one code applies to all of those same golf courses. So it's fascinating how they've evolved and how they can be applied to almost, you know, almost anything that happens out there.
A second ago, you just said there are 34 rules of golf.
That's correct.
There are only 34 rules.
That's correct.
But each rule has its own subset of rules.
A little bit of a subsection, but it's not a very big booklet of items. You know, it's pretty condensed.
So it should be fairly straightforward on what the rule is.
Should be is the operative word. Yeah.
And do you have statistics on whether people, if they obviously read the rule book, and you know, you distribute these when people get memberships to the USGA, and how they follow them?
One of the things that we do know is, like, most golfers, you know, want to do the right thing and try and do the right thing. And one of the services we provide at the USGA is that we answer rules questions, whether it be on the telephone or by email or by letter. And email is probably our biggest crunch right now. We answer, you know, over 20,000 rules questions a year, and there's three or four staff members who do that.
Wow.
And so it's a lot. So we know that people want to play by the rules because they're asking, you know, for rulings. You know, what's the right thing here?
Mm-hmm.
And or they're just trying to win a bet, you know, that
kind of thing. Of
course.
I mean, I would think that 19,950 of those are based on somebody's money.
Yeah. And you know, it's you know, whether it be, you know, we get questions from club championships, from member guests, from high school events, from collegiate events, and we even consult with the tour officials when they something comes up that stumps them. So, you know, we provide a service that just helps interpret this code. It's just 34 rules, but like I said, the game is played on these acres of land, and you know, and things happen out there, and the rules cover things pretty well, and just sometimes trying to figure out which one fits which situation.
What do you think would be the most commonly misunderstood rules?
Well, I don't know if there's, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions about the rules out there. And one of them right off the bat for very new golfers is that if they play by the rules, they're going to have to add penalty strokes. And that's not necessarily the case. You know, if players know the rules, they're going to avoid penalty strokes, and they're going to, you know, and probably enjoy the game a little more because they'll be, you know, knowing how to proceed, and they'll save time, and things will move along a little more smoothly. And then probably one of the most misunderstood concepts out there, you know, and I don't know if it's the most misunderstood because we don't have statistics on it specifically, is just the notion of, you know, when you're taking relief from an obstruction or an abnormal ground condition, just determining the nearest point of relief from that condition. I mean, there's all kinds of misconceptions about what that point is.
And whether or not you're going to be penalized a stroke?
Correct. Yeah, but that's not so much, you know, everybody pretty much knows when they get a free a free relief from something, and that's that.
We know free.
Yeah, free is from an obstruction or an abnormal ground condition. You know, you get free drop from that. So it's just, you know, how to do it properly is the kicker.
Right.
And players don't necessarily have to be students of the rules, you know, to be able to play the game as it's designed. Because the rules of golf committees from the USGA and the Royal and Ancient in Scotland have a basic principles they attend to, you know, when they're considering a change or a revision. And that's the basic game is you play the course as you find it and you play the ball as it lies. You hit the ball from the tee to start play of a hole, and you don't touch it again until you pick it out of the hole. You know, if you can do those things, you're not going to get into any trouble with the rule.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah, and then unfortunately, you can't always play the ball as it lies. It might be in the bottom of a lake. Then we've got a rule to let you know how to proceed if your ball goes in the lake. Okay, your ball may be lost. We've got a rule to help you proceed if your ball may be lost. You may have a situation that it's not fair that you'd be required to play the ball as it lies. For example, comes to rest on a concrete cart path. I mean, you could hurt yourself or damage your equipment, you know, with your clubs. So we've got a rule that helps you get off of that situation. So we get a lot of complaints from those who think the rules are too complex, but the complexity comes in the fact that they are trying to help the player. You know, so the more they help the player, the more complex they get.
Well, golf is all about nuance.
Yeah, that's right.
And even in the rules, right?
Yes, that's true. And, you know, it's a pretty simple game. You hit the ball, go find it, and hit it again until you get it in the hole. And the rules, you know, when you're keeping it in play, they're pretty simple too.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Boy, you're making it sound so simple.
Yeah.
I wish my round was yesterday, too.
Yeah.
So I got to believe that there are rules that are based on etiquette,
mm-hmm.
rules that are based on common sense,
mm-hmm.
safety, tournament
mm-hmm.
play. How are the rules based? Or
well,
is it they just, oh, yeah, these are the rules that have been laid down. We're just going to keep them.
Yeah, well, I mean, they started off, the first written code was, you know, that we know about was written in 1744. So it was a few years ago, and then they've evolved. Because back then, the game was a little different than it is now. You know, people were hitting a ball into a rabbit hole and kind of making up the game as they went. And then they, you know, things started popping up out there, you know, that we needed to deal with, like, you know, sprinkler heads and cart paths. And, you know, for big events, you have the grandstands and the concession stands and all that. But as I mentioned before, you know, the overall, you know, code is the same, you know, whether you're playing professional golf or amateur golf. You know, the game that you were playing yesterday and the rules that you were playing by are the same that they use on the PGA Tour on a weekly basis or the LPGA Tour. And the rules do evolve, and in the process is essentially, you know, they're co-written. The rules are co-written by the RNA, Rules Limited, and the USGA. And so both groups have a Rules of Golf Committee. So there's a USGA Rules of Golf Committee and an RNA Rules Committee. And both groups receive questions out there. So we receive 20,000 questions a year. And also we see things that happen in our competitions. USGA runs 13 national championships and also on tour events. And things might happen that the rules don't handle very well. So therefore, the committee then will discuss that issue and a rule may be revised. And that rules change process occurs only on a four-year cycle. Okay, so the rules, you know, there's going to be a new version of the rules that go into effect January 1 of 2008. And those rules will be in effect for 4 years. And they don't change at all in those 4 years and in terms of the text of the rules. So, and those rules will not change unless both groups agree on the change. And so it's a fairly cumbersome process, but when a change does go into the book, you know it's been well thought out.
Very much so. And are there no rules are changed or amended unless both the USGA and the RNA agree on this?
That's correct.
So they have the exact same rules.
Yeah.
And that means globally we have all the same rules in golf.
Yep. Yeah, okay. Exactly right. And see, and the USGA is responsible for writing and interpreting the rules for the U.S., United States, and its possessions like Guam and Puerto Rico, and then also Mexico is under our jurisdiction. And then the RNA is responsible for the rest of the world.
Mm.
And in terms of the rules committees, like the USGA rules committee meets on its own 3 to 4 times a year, and the RNA committee meets the same number of times, then they meet jointly twice a year. And so, as I mentioned, there will be a rules change version, new book that goes into effect January 1 of 08. And the first USGA committee meeting discussing changes for 12 will be held the first weekend in February. So, I mean, it'll be a 4-year process of discussing the rules for possible changes in 12.
It seems so civilized. Yeah. You guys take the world, we'll get the stuff that we own.
We'll take the U.S. and Mexico, and you guys get the rest.
Yeah, well, you know, we keep trying to find other countries to own, but, you know, you could still govern their golf rules. We'll rule their government.
No, golf. It's the opposite, yeah.
Let's not go there.
Okay, I'm with you.
Yeah, thank you. let's talk about common misperceptions.
Uh-huh.
Regarding the rules, common mistakes at the tee box.
Well, it's not necessarily a mistake, but a common misperception, and you probably played in a group that you tee up your golf ball and you're sitting there and you take a little waggle and bump your ball off the tee.
That's one stroke.
How many times has somebody said, that's one?
Exactly.
Well, it's not.
Really?
Oh, no. You know, so the ball is not yet in play, so just put it back on the tee and make your first stroke. That's one misperception.
So touching the ball with your club on the tee...
You waggle it, yeah.
...is okay.
Yeah.
Now, but if you take a swing and you top it and it goes straight down into the ground or only a couple inches, that's one.
Yeah, if you make a stroke and your intent is to hit the ball and progress it towards the hole, then that's a stroke and it counts.
Okay.
That's a different deal.
Oh, I like that. That's a good one.
Yeah.
All right. Any more on the tee we should know about before we move to the fairway?
That's a key thing. But in stroke, well, one of the things in the tee is in stroke play, which everybody's got to start from the same place. So you got to be behind the tee markers.
Okay.
And if you always have that guy at the club or the course who gets it up as close as he possibly can, and sometimes a little bit in front of those markers. Well, if he does tee off from in front of the markers, then that's a 2-stroke penalty. He's got to bring it back and get it in play from the right spot.
And how far back behind the tee markers can you start?
You got 2 club lengths in depth, and that's usually not the concern. Usually it's up front.
But if you go back beyond 2, is that also 2 strokes?
Yep, that's outside the teeing ground. It's a rectangular area, so that's outside the teeing ground, and you've got a 2-stroke penalty and have to come back. And
what if you place your tee inside the markers, mm-hmm. but you stand outside the marker?
That's okay.
That's acceptable.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. This is good.
Now, in match play, it's a different deal.
Oh.
You know, then it's just, you know, match play is what's fun because it's personal. It's between you and your opponent. And in
Which
match
means you
play,
get to make up the rules?
No, you don't get to make up your rules. They're just a little different in terms of how they're applied because it's just between you and your opponent. You're not playing against the entire field. And so if you play from outside the teeing ground, in match play, there's no penalty. It's just up to your opponent whether or not he wants to recall that stroke. And he can let it stand. For example, if you hit it into the boonies, you know, into a bad lie, he might say, okay, you know, that stroke stands as played. You know, we're just going to make you play it. If you hit a great shot, tag it down the middle, he can say, you know, that was a pretty good shot. I want to see you do it again, this time from within the teeing ground. So that's what makes it match play fun.
That's we get to the psychological rules.
Yeah, a little... gamesmanship.
Right.
Makes it fun.
You call that fun, huh?
Oh, yeah.
The gamesmanship part from a referee. Gamesmanship, 10-yard penalty. All right, let's get to the fairway.
Uh-huh.
Misperceptions there.
Well, you know, one of the things that happens on occasion is that, you know, if you're in the fairway and you take a practice swing, no intent whatsoever to hit the ball, but bump the ball and it squirts sideways 5-10 yards, that's not a stroke. You get a penalty. You get one penalty stroke, and you have to replace the ball on the spot from which it was moved.
Okay. So just it doesn't count like
lot.
It's not like out of bounds where it's you it's almost ends up two strokes. You hit one, you bring it back, that's two, and then you're hitting your third.
Yeah.
This is just oops, one, and go.
Put it back. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
That's one. But I'm trying to think of some other things. The other thing that's kind of a little bit of a conflict now that a lot of guys think that they should be getting relief from divot holes,
mm-hmm.
unrepaired divots. Or sand-filled divots, and just know that that's probably never going to happen within the rules of golf to provide relief from without penalty from divots or sand-filled divots.
That's play it where it lies.
Yeah, and that's just a basic premise. You know, you go back, as I mentioned before, you got to play the course as you find it and play the ball as it lies.
And landing on a sprinkler head?
Now, a sprinkler head is something that's been placed out there for the maintenance of the course, and so it's not natural in any way, so you're going to be able to drop away from it without penalty.
Okay. And when you drop, the rule states what?
That you got to first determine that nearest point of relief, which I mentioned is confusing, but it's the point on the course nearest to where the ball lies, that if the ball were on that spot, there's no interference for the lie, stance, or area of intended swing, and that spot is not near the hole. So you determine that spot and then drop within one club length of that point.
And always away from the hole.
Yeah, not near the hole.
Right.
Yeah.
Not closer to the hole.
Correct.
Let's talk about the rules regarding out of bounds and lateral.
Yeah.
Hazard.
There's two fairly different things. Mm-hmm. Out of bounds and lost balls are pretty straightforward. So if you have a ball that's lost, can't find it within 5 minutes, or it's out of bounds, you have one choice only, and that's to add a penalty stroke and go back to where you played your last stroke. Okay? That's for out-of-bounds and lost ball. Now, if you're in a hazard, there's two types of water hazards. Water hazards, which are yellow, stakes and or lines, and lateral water hazards, which are red, stakes and or lines. Okay? If it's yellow, you've got three choices. Okay? You can, first of all, play the ball as it lies without penalty. Second choice is to add a penalty stroke and go back to where you played your last stroke, so that would be stroke and distance. Same thing as if it was lost. Or the third choice is to add a penalty stroke and keep the point where the ball last crossed the margin of the hazard between the hole and go back on that line and as far as you want and drop the ball on that line. So that's if it's yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's red, you have five choices. You have those three, play as it lies, no penalty, stroke and distance, keep the point where the ball last crossed the margin of the hazard between you and the hole and go back on that line. Those are the first three. Your fourth choice, if it's red, is to drop the ball within two club lengths of where the ball last crossed the margin of the hazard, not near the hole. Or the fifth choice is go to the opposite margin of the hazard, equidistant from the hole, and drop within two club lengths of that point.
Explain that to me a little further. I'm not clear on that.
Okay, so you can say you have a stream up the right side of the fairway.
Okay.
And the stream is, I don't know, 5 yards wide, little creek. And you hit your ball over it, you know, over the stream, and it rattles around in the trees, and it comes back from the far side of the stream and goes into the hazard. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
So it last crossed on the far side of the hazard. Well, you know, you have those first four options, which I mentioned. Played as it lies, not happening because it's under 2 feet of water. Okay, so then you have stroke and distance. You know, you don't want to do that. Too big of a penalty. Keep the point where the ball last crossed the margin and go back. Well, that's back in the woods. You can't do that. Two club lengths from where it last crossed. That's on the wood side of the hazard, so it's not a great option. But now the fifth choice is you can go to the equidistant point on the other side of the hazard, which is the fairway side of that hazard now, equidistant from the hole, and drop within two club lengths of that point.
Okay.
Pretty good option.
Very good.
It's kind of complex, but it's a good option.
Well, it's well thought out.
Yeah.
Clearly,
yeah.
they've had these problems. Even the people
plan.
At the USGA hit it out of bounds. I'm so happy to know this. It's not
yeah.
just me.
Yeah, no. Don't worry. You know, you're not alone in that category.
Let's head over to the green now and common misperceptions on the rules on the green.
Well, probably, you know, there's more rules things that can happen on the green than anywhere because you're doing more stuff there and you're taking half your strokes on this one little area and you're permitted to mark and lift your golf ball on the putting green. Also, there's some stuff that you're permitted to do on your line of putt and there's stuff that you're prohibited from doing on your line of putt. And so there's you know, a lot of stuff. If things are going to go, you know, haywire, that's probably where it's going to happen. For example, you're only permitted to touch your line of putt in a few instances. And the line of putt is that line that you wish your ball to take on its way to the hole. So, you know, you can only touch that line in certain circumstances to remove loose impediments, leaves and twigs.
Goose droppings.
Yeah, goose droppings.
Thank
yeah,
that,
yeah, poo-poo, you know, all that stuff. You know, to replace and to lift and replace the ball, you can touch your line of putt. And the only damage you can repair on your line of putt or is ball marks made by the impact of the ball and old hole plugs. You know, sometimes they're sunk down or pushed up a little bit. You can repair those. But spike marks or other damage to the green, animal tracks, any of that stuff you cannot repair.
Very good.
So you're really restricted in terms of what you can do on that line of play. It's sacred ground. So.
I'm sure that we can talk for another 2 hours about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But before we go, because generally I go around 30 minutes and we're close to being there.
Oops, sorry about that. I got kind of long-winded there. But
No. And that's what I love about podcasting. It doesn't matter. We can keep going. This is so cool. I do want to briefly, I don't know if it's a brief answer or not, maybe we should do this again, but the new rules that are coming up for 2008.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple of key rules changes. And the thing that everybody will be probably recognize the most is that the player will now be permitted to lift the ball in a hazard, a bunker or a water hazard, to identify it. You know, so prior to January 1, you cannot lift a ball in a hazard to identify it. But then along with that, you're not penalized for playing a wrong ball out of a hazard. That will all change in January 1 of next year. Because you will be permitted to lift your ball. Now you will also be penalized if you play a wrong ball from within that hazard.
And the purpose of that clearly is to identify you're being able to identify your ball.
Yeah, and just make the rules more simple, you know, and straightforward because, you know, when you're restricted from not being able to lift it, then there's all these exceptions. You know, a player's entitled to mark and lift his ball for identification except when his ball's in a hazard. Well, that exception goes away.
Yeah.
And so it's just now you can deal with it the same as if you're in the fairway or the rough.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
And some other things that'll be clarified a little bit are in regards to advice. You know, exchanging distance information is not advice. So, or no longer advice, and it hasn't been for the couple of years, but that's clarified a little more in the rules that if you and I are out there playing, you can ask me how far it is from your ball to the hole. That's okay. And if the local rule is in effect to permit distance measuring devices,
the GPS, the range finder.
Yeah,
and
I have the device and you don't. I can lend you that device so you can use it, or I can use it and give you the information I get from it. So that's okay to share any of that information or to share that equipment. And that'll be clarified a little more in the next batch of rules.
And I can just, the person can ask me and I can just read it to him and that would be acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then these GPS devices and these range-finding devices are seen as a positive thing for the pace of play for golf, so they're incorporating them into rules?
Yeah, they're starting to see a little more positive response in terms of pace. It's still contrary to the rules of golf to use them. However, the committee in charge of a competition or in charge of the course can implement a local rule that does permit them, but the local rule has to be in effect before players can use them. And when some of those devices first came out, we were finding that they actually slowed down play because guys were out there playing with their toys rather than playing golf.
Hey, watch it.
And now that they've been around a while.
I like my toys.
Now that they've been around a while, it's not so much the case. So we are seeing a little bit of increased pace.
Yeah. I definitely think that it's so much easier to just check the range finder there, know what it is, get my club and go, as opposed to walking around and looking
and
for
finding a sprinkler head,
the courses that only have the 50, 100, and 150, 200 markers, and you start pacing them off. Yeah. And then you have to decide which club to play.
For me, it doesn't make it, you know, it doesn't make much difference. You know, I'll just pull a club and hit it, because I'm not going to hit the green anyway, so it just doesn't matter what club I've got.
Come on, you don't get free lessons? There's got to be someone there giving you advice.
Yeah, we're more into the rule stuff, you know, and handicapping. We're not so much into the skill of the game.
Yeah,
so. Exactly.
And I would really, is it against the rules for someone to give you advice while you're playing on how you hit, how you stroke the ball?
That is contrary to the rules. That's a no-no.
Oh, thank you. Because there's some people that I play with that want to tell you what you're doing wrong.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just hate that.
Yeah, just ring them up for two every time they do that. And
okay.
They'll slow down. They'll quit doing it for a while.
Two strokes on you every time you give me advice?
Yeah.
You are on. I love that rule.
That would come under Rule 8, so check out Rule 8.
Okay, that is the one we're going to talk about forever and ever. Rule number 8, no advice.
That's right.
No lessons unless I'm paying you.
And that's right. And other than on the golf course.
Other than on the golf course, right. Wow.
Okay.
All right. Any other new ones we want to get to quickly?
Those are the key things that most folks will notice out there. So there's some other little things that are kind of little nuances, but it won't really change how we proceed. So those are the two biggies. So.
Well, how can we go online and find out the information of what the new rules are going to be?
Well, if you go to the USGA website, www.usga.org, and on the rules page, the new rules are posted, as well as kind of a comparison of the new rules with the old rules. So it's posted out there right now, and you can go and get that information.
Dr. Ginger Follison, USGA Rules Education, thank you so much for sharing this. This is really much more entertaining than I thought it was going to be. Thanks so much. I really
good.
Enjoyed
You're
it.
You're welcome. Glad to do it.
It's time to ask Kenny. Do you need informed answers about specific golf gear or have questions about what to look for when you're buying new golf goodies? Kenny Nicholson, technical specialist at Edwin Watts Golf, is here to help. To submit your question, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. If we use your question on the show, we'll send you a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and edwinwattsgolf.com, America's golf club. And that doesn't exclude the rest of the world. It's just they're America's golf club. What does that mean, Kenny? We're talking to people all over the world.
I know. That was a big conversation whenever we were coming up with that. But we do definitely include everybody in the world whenever we talk about that.
Because everybody wants to be part of America's golf club.
That's correct.
Okay, fine. Hey, Kenny, guess what?
What, Fred?
I got an eagle.
No, you didn't either.
I did, but it wasn't. Okay, a couple weeks ago, I had a shot out of the rough, 85 yards on a par 4, and actually it was at this tournament. And they used my drive, and I hit the second shot, and it went in. All right, so it was really my eagle, and it was the group of people that opened this show. But this week, I had on a par 5, I had a great drive to put it right up the center of the fairway, and I went for the green in 2, which I don't ever do, and I made it, and then I sunk a 20-foot putt. I mean, like, all 3 shots worked.
And so, but it was a scramble, right?
No, it was me. I was just playing with people.
Oh, you were just playing your own. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. I thought it was a scramble. I was fixing to have to get technical on you and say, Fred, we're going to have to view everybody.
No, come on, man. This is the rules show. I'm not. This show is all about rules today. And
yeah,
so,
it is. Well, congratulations. I mean, awesome, man.
I'm stopping people on the street going, I got an eagle. They're going, shut up.
Yeah, what are you
Who are you?
Good deal. That's awesome.
Yeah. And then, God, we have so much to go. This weekend, I got the chance to go to the USC-Cal football game and can now check off my list, sitting for 4 hours in the rain watching football. Not that I ever put it on my list of things to do, but I can definitely check it off my list.
Was it worth going?
It was a great football game. Yeah,
and
it was.
USC ended up winning, I think.
Well, they, you know, 17-17 going into the fourth quarter. So you got it. You know, it's anybody's ball game, and you knew it was going to be a mistake that wins the game, and pretty much it was. But it was really a fun ball game, and my kid's roommate played a great game.
Well, good.
It's time. Okay. And today's, I don't know why we're doing current events here today, Kenny. San Francisco Chronicle front page, really interesting headline. Can Obama do for U.S. politics what Tiger Woods did for golf? Now, I don't want to get into the Obama part of this. There's no need for that. But isn't it fascinating how they're, and it even says here that this guy who heads the San Jose Survey of Policy Research Institute wrote an essay where he argued that Woods, quote, has opened up a pathway for Obama in the American political psyche as no one before him. They're calling him the Tiger Woods of American politics.
That's how big Tiger is. I'm not going there.
Yeah, I mean, but no, but when you just talk about how an athlete can lead the way and have fascinating. So, Kenny, we have questions from listeners today.
Let's go there. Tiger's done for golf is amazing. I will say that. I mean, when you look at what the purses were before he came along and what they are now is truly astonishing.
Yeah.
So good for him. And let's move on to a real golf question.
Okay. How about this one, Kenny? This one comes from Steven. He didn't give us a last name, but he's in San Antonio, Texas. And he says, I picked up golf about a month ago and bought an adult set of clubs from a local sports store. Being 6'2", I've been told to get my clubs lengthened, and I'd notice a huge improvement in my game. Check this. He picked up golf a month ago, and he says that he is starting to shoot in the mid-80s consistently. Wow. How do people do that? So his question is, how much benefit would he see by getting his clubs lengthened, or should he just get a new set of higher-end clubs and then lengthen those?
Man, if he's been playing golf a month and he's shooting in the mid-80s, mid to low-80s already, I say he's doing just fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Typically what you find with somebody that is 6'2 and higher and they're using a standard set of golf clubs, the club's going to be a little bit short for them, so they're standing a little bit closer to the ball. And what typically happens is the toe of the golf club tends to hit the ground first when you take a divot. And what that does, obviously, is it opens the club face up, and you typically lose shots to the right, either in a slice form or everything just is headed in the right. And I say right direction, not as in good, but as in bad. So having those clubs lengthened a little bit and having the lie adjusted correctly, he's able to hit the club more flush and more square, and there's not going to be as much drag on the toe or heel, so he's going to hit the ball a little bit straighter. So it would benefit him more. It sounds like he's playing great if he's going to continue to play some instead of investing in that set and having to pay a premium to get them all lengthened and the lie adjusted, to start looking at a little bit higher end club. And there's no extra charge to have the clubs fitted whenever you buy them new. So why not use that money that you would spend on that set that he has now and just apply it towards a better set of golf clubs? Because it sounds like he's going to be sticking around with the game if he's already shooting in the mid-80s and he's only been playing for a month. I would definitely look at getting into a more premium set and having them fitted correctly for him.
Absolutely. And being in San Antonio, Texas, he gets to play 12 months a year.
Absolutely. And there's an Edwin Watts right there in San Antonio. So good for him. That's a plus-plus.
Now, Kenny, if he were to walk in the Edwin Watts store in San Antonio and say, do I get my Golf Smarter 10% discount here?
That is definitely a good question, and yes, they would know about it.
They would?
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome, awesome. All right, here's another one from a new golfer. This is Barack Platt in San Diego, California, who he says he stores his golf clubs in the back of his car. I notice many golfers seem to always keep the hood on a golf bag closed. Can you let me know the proper way to store my clubs, and if I should also keep the hood closed? The hood of, I mean, I guess he's talking about the rain hood on the top of his bag, right? And not even yet, if it's okay to store the clubs in his car. Again, San Diego, so he's 12 months a year golfer. They don't get that much rain in San Diego. Why do they have hoods on their bags? I'm confused.
Yeah, some people put them on there whenever they travel just to keep the golf clubs in the bag itself. But
yeah,
me personally, I mean, living in Florida, we play 12 months out of the year. And how many times do you go somewhere and a guy says, hey, let's go play today, and you don't have your clubs with you? So a lot of people do keep them in the trunk of their car.
I would not advise
keeping a hood on them, because one, you're going to, if there's any moisture in there, if you played and it was damp or the clubs got wet, that moisture is not going to have a chance to dry out. So it's not, in my opinion, it's not a good idea to keep a hood on the bag in the trunk of your car. Some people do, just to keep the clubs from flying in and out of the bag if you're a real erratic driver. But at the same time, you got to use common sense and say, hey, if you're keeping no air getting inside that bag, it's going to wear on the grips over time, as well as the golf clubs themselves. Shafts don't typically rust unless they're submerged, but as far as the heads of the golf club, you'll start seeing the cavity in the back of the golf club getting little rust spots, and to help that from not happening, do not put a cover over them whenever you keep them in the trunk of your car, and in the garage for that matter. I would just open it up and let them be able to breathe.
Yeah, absolutely, excellent. And I hope that helps, Barack. Barack Platt, not Obama. But we had a two Barack show. Who would ever think we'd have a two Barack show going here? Ken Schreck wants to know, and Ken has written to us before. He's in Clinton Township, Michigan. He wants to know if you've heard anything about these new Odyssey putting wedge. And he wants to know if you can do a review on it in an upcoming podcast. I've never heard of a putting wedge. Have you?
Well, it's the same thing as a hybrid chipper.
Oh, the one from Prince.
Or a Chipping Chippo, things like that. You're going to use... which was a very popular club. It's used from just around the green. Typically, they have about a 35 to 37 degree loft.
Well, we gave away a Prince hybrid chipper not long ago.
We did, and you can use that from farther out than you would this Odyssey Marksman.
Yeah, I've played with that club. I've had fun with it.
Now, a lot of people have had great success with it. The new club that's coming out from Odyssey is actually called a Marksman X-Axe Putting Wedge. It's going to be available any day now, actually. So, hold on.
Yeah, and we're talking about, right now we're in mid-November of 2007, so if you're listening to this at a future date, it's out. We promise you it's already out.
If you listen to it at a future date, it's out now. And what it is, this club is used from anywhere from just off the green or what they call like 15 yards off the green for little pitch shots, bump and runs. But typically what you would use it for is if you're just off the green, use it just like you would a putter. Take the same type putting stroke. The ball gets on the green a little bit quicker and gets a more forward roll instead of checking up like a wedge would do. A lot of times when you hit down on a club or a wedge or a 9-iron or something, the ball tends to check up just a little bit and then roll. So great game improvement club for somebody that struggles just around the green. I would definitely advise it just because it makes those short little chips a lot easier than it would with a traditional wedge, 9-iron, whatever you use to chip around the greens. You might benefit from this a lot.
Okay. So it's nothing brand new. It's just a new manufacturer coming out.
Yeah, it's brand new for Odyssey. It's nothing. These clubs have been around for a while, and there's definitely a market for them. So Odyssey's definitely getting into that market, and it's going to be a good seller, I can go ahead and tell you now. I mean, it's a very popular club for a lot of people out there.
Yeah, and Odyssey has a lot of success with their putters, so, right?
Yeah, and it's the same type design. It's just, it looks similar to their putter line, but obviously it has a 37-degree loft on it. So it has the same Stronomic insert. You can view that as well on our website, or you can go to Odyssey Golf.
It's not going
to
be like a two-ball chipper, is it?
No. It's not like a two-ball chip. It's like a mid-mallet look almost. It has what they call a high-def alignment system, which makes it easier to line up. You know, you want something like that with a traditional golf club. Sometimes you're trying to figure out, okay, where's the line? This makes it a little bit easier to get the line that you want, and definitely not as much drag as you would find on a traditional golf club.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you right now, where the average person loses strokes a lot of times is around the green. So any club that's going to help you eliminate a couple of shots during your round of golf is going to be a great club. And I think this is one that's going to be able to help eliminate for the average to high handicap player. It's going to help eliminate some of those shots. I mean, how many times you go back and you get done, you're sitting or you're driving home after a round of golf and you're like, you know, I just shot 84. And if I could have gotten up and down on these other four holes, I could have broke 80. You know, there you go.
Oh, all right. Well, okay, I'll admit it. When I got this eagle last week, that was on the 10th hole of this course. That put me at a +4 after 10 holes. All right? So I was playing pretty well for me. I went +15 on the rest of the round. I was cursed by that eagle, and that was because I lost a lot of shots around the green. It really
also,
was. Yeah. It was thick.
And
it
also, you knew where you were after 9. You're like, man, if I could just keep it up.
And I'm trying to like, all right, just let it go, breathe, heart math, do all these things that I've done interviews on and learned all this stuff, calm down, forget about it. I kept leaving it in the tall grass around the greens and just screwing up and adding strokes there. And that was, you know, I, because of the eagle, it saved the round, but it was a frustrating late stretch. It was tough. Sean Bender asked questions a couple weeks ago, and he's now communicating a lot. And also want to thank him for the nice review that he did on iTunes. Kenny, we talked about last week, maybe we can get up to 100 reviews by our 100th episode. And as we record this, I've just checked, we are at 102 reviews. So thank you very much to everyone who's written the very nice things about us. I've asked for honest reviews. I'm not sure if we've gotten them all honest, but they've all been positive. So I really appreciate that. Kenny, they say very nice things about you too and Edwin Watts Golf, and we appreciate that. Maybe we should, like, ask them to do something important in the world if they're going to move when we ask. But Sean wrote an interesting thing, since we're talking about new and different, as we were about this, the putting wedge. He says, since this is a podcast and everyone in the world has an iPod or other MP3 player, why don't you see any golf bags with little speakers built in so you can plug in your iPod and listen to Golf Smarter out on the course or on the range?
I don't know if the guy playing with you would want to listen to it.
Well, his next line is, I can see the case being made about respecting those around you and not wanting to encourage rude behavior, but I'm talking about a carry bag that stays near you all the way. I play those solo practice rounds at a local executive course, and I've tried to enjoy my iPod, and because the right music, he says, keeps him focused and it blocks out distractions, but the earphone cords get in the way, and the feeling of them tugging at my ears during a swing is pretty counterproductive. I thought this was a no-brainer, but could not find any such product out there. Did I miss something? Yeah. Maybe I found a missing niche. I expect my cut, Kenny, when Edwin Watts launches this product. Well, Sean...
You know, it's one of those things. I see a lot of people on the range that have their earphone cord, you know, tucked in through their shirt. You know, they drop it down through their collar or whatever, and they have it plugged into their side, and they hit golf balls on the range.
And do you ask them what they're listening to?
I definitely do not.
Oh, come on. I have gone up to people and say, so what do you listen to on your iPod when you're out on the golf course? You don't listen to our podcast? What's a podcast?
I mean, it's pretty, you know, you see golf carts that have radios in them.
Really?
But, yeah, I mean, at some of the courses that we play here, there's a couple of carts that have radios in them. And it's just nice when you go out there for, if we do like a demo day tournament where we get a lot of the guys out there to hit new products and stuff, we'll joke around with it and play whenever we're out there playing. But whenever you're out there trying to compete against somebody, whether it's a $2 Nassau or just having fun, at the same time, I wouldn't put earphones in my head while I'm riding around the golf course. You know, you like to have a little camaraderie when you're out there, so... but as far as a bag, I don't know that I see that in the near future, but who knows? I've been wrong before.
Well, there's a couple suggestions. First of all, Sean, invent it. Go get yourself some investors and do a prototype, and you may end up on the Golf Channel. What's that show? For Inventors Only. The other thing I may suggest, two words, Bluetooth. You, why don't you just get some Bluetooth earphones, and then you won't have any cords at all.
There you go. That's a good idea.
There you go. All right. I think that's it for our questions today, but we are doing a giveaway. And this week, we're giving away the Nakent Hybrid or Fairway Wood. It's the Nakent 4DX, and the drawing is going to be held next episode. So our deadline for entry is noon on Monday, November 19th, 2007. And again, the drawing will be held on November 20th, 2007. And to enter, please go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the word contest just below the Edwin Watts Golf banner. And while you're there, you'll fill out your shipping information and the verification code, then click submit. And also, there's a space provided for you to send me a note or some comments or suggestions. And if you want to write a note to me, I'll be happy to respond. And also, again, we ask you to write questions to Kenny at golfsmarterpodcast.com. Click on the Ask Kenny button, and I will forward it off to Kenny. If you have a question that's not Kenny-related, maybe it's golf training-related or things like that, I'll save that question and put it in a list that I ask the people that I interviewed during the show as well. And, Kenny, you want to take some phone orders for the holiday season? Why don't you give that phone number once again?
Yeah, our number here is 800-874-0146. Obviously, with the holiday rush coming, do not procrastinate. So a lot of new products coming out that are going to be great holiday gifts.
And as a Golf Smarter listener, you receive 10% off your purchases, and you get free shipping in your orders. There are some restrictions, but most of the time, you'll be taken care of. And don't forget to mention that you, if you do call them on the phone, that you are a Golf Smarter listener, or if you walk in the store, you're a Golf Smarter listener, and that you will get that 10% discount applied. Thanks so much, Kenny. We'll talk to you next time for episode number 101.
Thanks, Fred.
Boy, the time is flying by. Thanks again to Dr. Ginger Follison, Assistant Director of USGA Rules Education. For more on USGA rules, go to usga.org. In keeping with the rules theme of today's show, we take a quote submitted by John Leland, who loves to play by and quote the rules while on the course. This quote may not keep your head in the game, make you laugh, or make you think, but it will allow you to understand that if you respect this great game, you should appreciate this quote from Francis Ouimet. Golfers should not fail to realize that it is a game of great traditions, of high ideals of sportsmanship, one in which a strict adherence to the rules is essential. If you have any quotes, questions, comments, or requests, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com.
The Good Dog Podcast is for people who are passionate about dogs.
I love my dogs.
I interview veterinarians, dog behaviorists, and a whole range of experts who offer tips and insights.
A good German Shepherd makes decisions. It will say, well, you know, I know the light just changed, but on the other hand, there's a very quiet Prius coming your way, and so I'm going to stop, whereas labs have a tendency to just follow rules.
You'll hear about some amazing canines who help their owners to be safe, and in some cases, alive.
Sometimes diabetics will test, and they'll still be at 100 saying, I'm not going low, what are you talking about? And the dogs let them know before they even feel it.
And you'll pick up ideas for solving a host of challenges.
Within a week, you're going to have a dog that is calm, he lies down quietly, he's just going to be a totally different dog.
I'm Joanne Green. Please subscribe to the Good Dog Podcast, found in iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.